from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
What were the best movies of 2017 and what were the worst? Register film critic Deacon Stephen Graydonis weighs in. And then the anniversary of Roe vs. Wade is only days away. So is the March for Life. From Register staff writer Peter Jesserer Smith, we get the latest on the pro-life cause and Planned Parenthood's restructuring. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register senior editor. Well, the movie awards season is officially underway, and while most people can't wait for the Oscars or the People's Choice Award, Catholics can ask, what were the movies of 2017 that also promoted Catholic culture?
And of course, we have Deacon Stephen Graydonis joining us now. Deacon Stephen writes for DecentFilms.com. That's where he reviews most of his movies. But he's also a film critic for the Register and blogs for the Register as well. Welcome back, Stephen.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's good to be here.
You know, before we get started, I have to say congratulations on a recent appointment in the fall. You were appointed to the New York Film Critics Circle, and that's a big deal.
It is. It is. And we just last week had our annual New York Film Critics Circle Awards ceremony. So that was my first time voting in these awards. And I have to say it's been very exciting.
And it's not easy to get in.
It's not. It's a pretty exclusive group. There's 42 now, the largest the group has ever been.
Wow.
I was part of an incoming class of 8, 4 men and 4 women.
Wonderful. Well, we're really proud of you for being a part of that and for the work that you do to bring these kind of critiques to a Catholic crowd and beyond, really. So
that's my intention.
Great. So 2017, though, was not a banner year for box office movies. So what do you think were some of the causes for this year's, I guess, disgraces?
It's true. 2017 was a terrible year for Hollywood. I mean, every year you could say is a good year for movies if you look far enough. But for Hollywood, it was a terrible year. It was the lowest domestic box office in a quarter century. And, you know, there were a lot of big budget, very prominent flops. Justice League, Tom Cruise's Mummy reboot, Guy Ritchie's King Arthur movie, sequels in the Aliens, Transformers, Pirates of the Caribbean franchises. I think that there were just so many sequels and remakes, so many bad movies, movies that just didn't offer the audiences what they wanted to see. Even The Last Jedi, although it's making a pile of money, has been very controversial, and it remains to be seen what kind of legs Disney's new Star Wars franchise is going to have going forward.
You had the impression that almost every other movie that was released throughout the year was tied to some sort of a franchise, Star Wars, the DC Universe, the Marvel Universe. Has the movie franchise business really set into decline, or has at least Marvel managed to create a sustainable universe?
The franchise is Hollywood's bread and butter, and it's going to remain so for a long time. Individual franchises may come and go, but the franchise model isn't going anywhere. The only director who's really working effectively outside that model in a big blockbuster mode is Christopher Nolan, whose Dunkirk is one of the year's most acclaimed films. And it's not part of any franchise, and it doesn't do any of the things that you expect a blockbuster to do in terms of, you know, character development and arcs and so forth. And yet people loved it. And I think that's one of the reasons that cinephile people like me are so excited about it.
And of course, that was number 2 on your list of top movies for 2017. But number 1 was Graduation.
Yes. So before I talk about that, I just want to say, you know, because the big ticket films of Hollywood were so terrible, that means by definition that most of the films worth talking about were more obscure. And as Catholics, we shouldn't be frightened by that. I love a quote from the 1971 pastoral instruction Communio et Progressio on the media of social communications, which encourages us to seek to acquire a truly Catholic taste. That's Catholic with a small C, meaning that we should try to learn to appreciate and understand, quote, the productions of all nations, cultures, and subcultures. So as Catholics, we shouldn't be afraid of subtitles. And with that thought, I bring you my number one film of the year, Graduation, or Baccalaureate. It's a Romanian film from a director, Romanian New Wave director, Cristian Mungiu, who previously directed the abortion-themed drama 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days, which was one of my top films of 2010, I think. This is the story of a morally compromised doctor in a marriage that's in decline, and he's invested himself in the success of his daughters graduating from high school and going on to college. And it's a film about the corruption of society and the insidiousness of the allure of cheating and corruption, and also about the price of integrity. So it raises all kinds of very interesting moral questions in the context of a very depressing family situation.
It's not the only film on your list, and whether it's the top 10 or runners-up that are more obscure, what are some of the others?
So I've got other films that are in this similar theme of you know, family breakdown and the toll of modernity on family life. One of them has the ironic name My Happy Family. This is a film from Georgia, as in the country, about a wife and mother who decides to leave her family and live on her own. Another post-marital film from Japan, After the Storm, by the filmmaker Hirokazu Koreeda, who's also done a number of top 10 films for me from previous years. I always look for the more redemptive and more encouraging examples. And in previous years, it's been my number one film. Last year, there was Patterson. The year before that, it was Brooklyn. I didn't find one that I could put in the number one spot, but I'm very enthusiastic about a little film called Maudie. This is in English. It's directed by Ashlyn Walsh, and it's a fact-based story about the Nova Scotian folk artist Maud Lewis, who's played in the film by Sally Hawkins, who's getting a lot of acclaim for her performance in The Shape of Water. She's wonderful there. I think she's even better here. Ethan Hawke is also in the film. He plays a kind of loutish and very slowly humanized man that she marries. And although their marriage is far from perfect, it's the best movie marriage that I found this year, and it's really interesting and Maudie. I loved it.
So in your top five list, you've got a film from Romania, you've got a film from Georgia, the country, as you point out. There's one from Japan. I know that there's another one from China, I think. That's Behemoth, right?
Yes, yes, Behemoth. Very arty, kind of dreamlike documentary about the cost of mining and industrialization in the relationship between China and Inner Mongolia, and the toll that it takes on human beings and on the environment, and the cost, the social and human cost. It's structured from, it borrows a structure from Dante's Divine Comedy, and there are on-screen lines of poetry that are adapted from the Divine Comedy. So very kind of interesting interplay of biblical and timeless poetic themes and images with the crushing consequences of some aspect of modernity.
Well, now, given that these are all from different countries around the world, and obviously you have a very refined cinematic palette, but what does it say that the best movies of the year, as far as you're concerned, all come from different parts of the globe? And what does that say especially about the current industry in the United States?
There is one American film in my top five. That's Mudbound from Dee Reese. This is a story about two families, one black and one white, living in Jim Crow, Mississippi in the 1940s. But I think that it's pretty at this moment in time, Hollywood cinema is in a kind of decline. I mean, we just saw the collapse of Fox, 20th Century Fox. Their library's been bought out by Disney. Disney is really the only really successful studio in Hollywood right now. So I think it's a challenge to Hollywood. I mean, we are seeing some rising film production from newcomers like Amazon and Netflix, and so we'll have to see what comes of that.
Now, Stephen, I do have a question. We have just about a minute left, and These are very serious topics. I mean, these are some serious films that you've brought to our attention, ones that we probably really need to reflect on. But among these, is there one that is the most uplifting, I would say, something that maybe can lift our spirits out of even some of the chaos we see all around us?
Consider a little documentary called Faces, Places, which is about noticing and celebrating overlooked people and fading ways of life in rural France. Unlike a typical documentary, it doesn't just put on screen the images of miners or dock workers' wives or whatever. It transforms the landscapes that they work in. And this is going to sound weird, by plastering their images in giant photo posters to the walls and surfaces around them. So, really kind of humanizing the landscape. It's by Agnès Varda, French New Wave director, and a visual artist who goes by JR. And I think that is one of the most uplifting films of the year.
Now, I have to say, this one didn't make your top 10, but it is a movie that I saw and really enjoyed. I think we've talked about it on the show together, and that's Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman is probably my favorite superhero movie of the year. I also enjoyed Spider-Man Homecoming. Wonder Woman really recaptured the ideal of the superhero as an inspirational figure that's been really kind of lacking in our current superhero movie culture climate.
You know, and I have one very important question. Some of these movies that you have mentioned, the ones that are not U.S.-based, where can people see them?
So all of these movies eventually come to Netflix or Amazon. The best thing that you can do if you want to see good movies is to get yourself a Netflix or Amazon account. And every once in a while, you may want to look at renting something from iTunes as well.
Very good. Well, Stephen, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and we know that this really is a ministry in a way for you because you're able to reach out and to give people different angles, the Catholic with the small c, the Catholic point of view. So thank you so much, Deacon Stephen, for being with us.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's my privilege.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Register staff writer Peter Jesser-Smith, and we'll get an update on Planned Parenthood as well as an update on preparations for the upcoming Marches for Life. This is Register Radio on EWTN.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the chair of Peter. And I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
Join EWTN for coast-to-coast coverage of the March for Life from Washington, D.C. and One Life LA from Los Angeles as the faithful take a stand for the unborn and all who suffer after decades of legalized abortion in the United States. Join us for coast-to-coast coverage of the most important pro-life events of the year. It all begins January 18th on EWTN-TV and EWTN Radio Classics.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by my co-host here on Register Radio, Matthew Bunsen. And we are both joined by our Register writer, staff writer, Peter Jesser-Smith. Peter, good to have you.
Well, thanks, Jeanette. It's always a pleasure.
So the annual March for Life is almost upon us. It's coming up very quickly here. The pro-life movement is always preparing a very peaceful and prayerful march that just is intended to raise attention to the horrors of abortion and other attacks on life in our country. But before we launch into the March for Life, I'd like to discuss the biggest abortion industry giant, Planned Parenthood. They have had a tough year in a way, right?
Well, it all depends on how you're counting.
I guess I would say they've closed a number of clinics. And so on the surface, it looks like they've had a rather interesting year. But you've done a report recently, a write-up on a report that they put out that actually shows the details of what's really happening there. And it was extremely interesting to me. So on one hand, where it looks like there's this decline that they've closed a number of clinics in the last year, I think it was 32. That's not the whole story of what's happening with Planned Parenthood, is it?
No, no, it's definitely not. And that's part of the reason why it's important to dig down into these reports and really get the context of what's happening. You can't really tell the health of Planned Parenthood just by a clinic closing. The reality is, and I talked with COA's dean of the business school, William Bowman, about this. The reality is this is an industry that is retooling for the 21st century, and they're doing what an otherwise a well-managed nonprofit should be doing, or even a well-managed business. You adapt to your market, you see what the retail space that you don't need, you cut off your dead weight, and you try to invest in your future. And honestly, that's what they're doing. They had a bonanza year. Well over $500 million. The real story was how private donations nearly matched the amount of government reimbursements and grants they received. This is an organization that I think rightly got spooked by David Daleiden's expose, but set about making sure that they protected their financial interests and expanded their donor base, and it's been a huge bonanza for them.
So there have been some cuts that they received in government funding. Of course, that was part of the big push of David Daleiden and others who were just trying to reveal what Planned Parenthood is about. They had some funding cuts, but that just seems to cause them to drum up the private support, and we all know there are many, many in Hollywood and other well-funded places that will support something like Planned Parenthood. So they were easily able to raise those funds. What is the solution? The analysts that you've talked to, what do they suggest? What is Planned Parenthood's weak point?
Well, I mean, to understand what Planned Parenthood did, I mean, this report showed they delayed their report from the previous year. So you actually have to read them two together. What they've done is they've tried to retrench their support. They've established 350 Generation Action Planned Parenthood chapters on campuses, so kind of their response to Students for Life, to entrench their support among millennials. They've really invested a lot in local lobbying and statewide lobbying to make sure that their financial interests are protected there. And what they also did was they dumped approximately about $100 million into that, and $20 million of which was spent overhauling technology. This is an important context because in making a push to defund Planned Parenthood of federal money is really, really important. But William Bowman, the dean at the COA's business school, looking at these financials, said, look, the reality is that if this trajectory of private donations keeps up, and the political realities is that the removing Planned Parenthood's government funding isn't going to be the kind of death blow that it would be in 2018. They're an organization that basically is preparing to wean themselves off of any kind of government dependency, which means that the only option left is basically fighting Planned Parenthood client for client in the free open market, and the pro-life movement is nowhere near funded for that. The donors have not stepped up.
Peter, you note that over the past 5 years of reports, Planned Parenthood's clients have declined from 3 million to 2.4 million. Cancer screenings, though, have declined by 50%. Contraception services have dropped 21%. So it seems like, contrary to what Planned Parenthood is saying, that more and more the focus is on abortion, which is what the pro-life movement has been saying forever.
Yeah, well, abortion is definitely their biggest sort of cash cow in terms of non-governmental revenue. Their problem, and I talked to Chuck Donovan, research, who is the president of Charlotte Lozier Institute, a pro-life research group, And he, you know, he pointed out the problem is their market is way too narrow. Now, Planned Parenthood relies on these other services, contraception, cancer screenings, whatever, to build a pre-existing relationship with the client so that when they're in a crisis pregnancy, they turn to Planned Parenthood, and that's where the money is made from abortion. The problem with Obamacare is that now that more people have insurance, they're able, community health centers are able to offer people, they're able to access community health centers. They're able to go elsewhere for these services, and they can go to pharmacies. The point being is that Planned Parenthood's market is way too narrow. And government regulations also have recommended less cancer screenings. So, you know, Donovan was pointing that they had leadership that said, we got to diversify beyond our current model, and they rejected it. And now they're a little bit behind the eight ball.
So if they're narrow casting in terms of their market, it really does seem to point to the necessity for political lobbying to advance the abortion agenda, certainly on a state level, doesn't it?
Planned Parenthood is good at casting a wide net of alliances and making sure that its big financial lifeline of abortion is maintained, but also doesn't appear to be the biggest thing that they're concerned about. My main concern, Matthew, is whether the pro-life movement and pro-life and Catholic donors are going to step up to allow pro-life alternatives that are rising now to go head-to-head with Planned Parenthood. And the place where they have to compete is in the digital sphere, is in the digital space. Planned Parenthood knows that. That's why they have completely overhauled their digital presence, and it is driving clients into abortion clinics.
Peter, this is such an important story. I want to invite our listeners to follow it at ncregister.com. The title of the story is Planned Parenthood Evolution Underway Thanks to Influx of Private Donors. It's an important look at where Planned Parenthood is today and where we need to go as a pro-life movement. But I don't want to lose the time to that we have to talk about the March for Life, because that's another important event to help people understand what the pro-life cause is actually doing. So, Peter, what's going on with the March for Life this year?
Yeah, so the March for Life ties into this, what we discussed nicely. It's the theme is Love Saves Lives. And the March has been very intentional about revamping its digital presence, about using digital and real-world engagement to get all those marchers, you know, in the ballpark about 100,000, engaged with seeing how the loving witness and action of pro-life ministries, whether it be these new pro-life health clinics that are rising, pregnancy centers, to show people that it's really that love is the entire, you know, raison d'etre, the whole reason for being for the pro-life movement. The mission is to use that march and that energy to not only advocate on the political side for that political change, but also for that cultural change, the cultural change that really needs a lot of investment right now.
So the march...
And it's going to be great.
Very good. The March for Life is January 19th. It's a Friday, and this is the march, of course, in Washington, D.C., of course, there are many other marches going around the country. And if you go to marchforlife.org and you look at info, you can find other marches. And you can also find trips. There's a wonderful trip planner if you are interested in hooking up with others who are going. So marchforlife.org is a wonderful website that highlights the March for Life in Washington, D.C., but also highlights the marches going on in dioceses around the country. Peter, turning back to the D.C. March, who's going to be involved? I mean, who are we looking at to lead the rally and the march itself?
Oh, well, we got a few number of speakers headlining it. We have House Speaker Paul Ryan will be there to headline the March rally. We've also got Congressman Chris Smith and Dan Lipinski, the Republican and Democrat co-chairs of the Congressional Pro-Life Caucus. But we've also got other people as well. Matt Burke, Super Bowl champion, who declined an invite from from President Obama when the Ravens won, because he said I President said he stands with Planned Parenthood, and I respect the office, but I can't go as a Catholic and be associated with that. So he and his wife are going to be there to offer their support and testimony. And then there's also going to be a sister of life there as well, Sister Bethany Madonna, I believe. And so yeah, we're going to have a nice cross section of the different some of the different voices and leadership that makes up the pro-life movement.
So this March for Life, the big March for Life in Washington, D.C., is, of course, covered by EWTN on TV and radio, so our listeners can tune in both places. And then later in the month, the Walk for Life in San Francisco, which is on January 27th, is also covered by EWTN radio and TV. One Life L.A. is on January 20th. It's also covered by EWTN TV. So you can follow all of those events through EWTN. Peter, before we close, we just have 2 minutes left. I mean, it's real short, but you sure. mentioned what the pro-life movement needs to do to mobilize, and there are some groups that are reaching out to these people who are, let's say, left over from Planned Parenthood or who are looking for alternatives. What are those groups, and mm-hmm. how should we look out for them?
Well, there's a lot of different approaches right now, but the main focus is on the digital side of things. It's the big takeaway that I have from this, from both the reading Planned Parenthood reports and from this other article I've done on the March for Life, is that digital engagement is the pro-life future. The people are searching for abortion on their smartphones. They need to find pro-life alternatives on their smartphones. You know, Obria Group is one of them, creating a digital telemedicine platform to reach people. But the ordinary witness of people on social media is vital. You never know the kind of message of compassion that and pro-life witness can make a difference. And one woman I spoke with, she had a friend who made a difference in somebody's life to choose life because of that social media witness.
Peter, thank you so much for the reporting you do on the March for Life. And I encourage listeners to go to ncregister.com during the March for Life. We will be posting pictures and keeping people engaged on our own site. This is an important event and a wonderful way for us to unite for the cause of life. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.